White Rocket Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Patreon.com. This episode is a special look back to DragonCon 2016. This is a recording I've had floating around for about a year now that just never quite got on the air, but I wanted to retain its entirety because it sums up the wacky craziness of most of the panels on Gary and Joe's classic sci-fi track at DragonCon. In this episode, on this panel at DragonCon, we were talking about the two 30-minute shows from syndication back in the early 2000s, Jack of All Trades and Cleopatra 2525. And I won't say anything else about that now. The show will cover that in very great detail in here in just a second. But I just wanted to say, I was a big fan of Jack of All Trades going into this, and I had lots to say about it, although it was a large panel, so I, you know, fit in what I could. I had never seen Cleopatra 25. I have no desire to see Cleopatra 25, so this may be the only panel in DragonCon history that I actually sort of fall asleep at some point during. I had just done Jeopardy right before this panel. I was exhausted, and we're in a hot room talking about a show I've never seen for half an hour. So somewhere about three quarters of the way through this panel, I actually kind of dozed off for a second, which I thought was kind of funny. I hate to be disrespectful to DragonCon and to Gary and to the panelists, but, you know, with the circumstances I mentioned there, I think it was kind of understandable. But it's a very fun discussion. It was just me being exhausted from doing 18 panels in 4 days. This is Gary Mitchell and crew, with me included, on the classic sci-fi track of DragonCon 2016, talking about Jack of All Trades and Cleopatra 2525. Enjoy!
I am Gary Mitchell, along with Joe Crow. I am the co-director of the American Sci-Fi Classics track. It's our fifth year. Woo! How many people here are in our Facebook group? We have a Facebook group. Facebook.com/group/American Sci-Fi Classics. Please use the hashtag. It's really long, but that's the way it is. We do posts and things all year long. We have discussions, and some panels that happen at DragonCon come from discussions that happened on the Facebook group.
And later, you'll probably find audio from these panels on the Facebook group.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And some panels have that for the next year's con happen at the previous con, like this panel.
Yes.
Which came out of someone going, we should talk about this next year. We went, okay.
Great idea.
Great idea.
So, with my introduction out of the way, and you can also, if you're interested, I have business cards, and you can follow me on Twitter as @GaryMitchell, @Gary_Mitchell, Mitchell with one L. And you are?
I am Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Hi.
You dig in?
I am a podcaster. I do, with that one right there,
Hi.
The Anomaly Podcast, where we talk about general geek topics, and I am also one of the co-hosts of Women at Warp, which is a feminist Star Trek podcast.
You should listen to it.
All right, well, that brings us to me. I'm Tegan, and I have a website, justtegan.com. My business cards are on the little alcove over there. I know there's an alcove. We were like, we're going to put things on the alcove. Whoa. That's really awesome.
We have been upgraded to alcove technology.
I know. We have alcoves now. It's super exciting.
Yes. Instead of columns.
I know. So you'll hear my dulcet tones on the Revolution FSF podcast as co-host of RevNews and a frequent appearer on the RevCast. I come here a lot, and tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., I'm going to pimp the mullet panel again. because if you want to have a nice, serious academic discussions about mullets at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, there's a PowerPoint. That's all I'm saying.
I should hope so.
You want in on this?
No reason. It's a parade.
Exactly. Just avoid the traffic and the congestion and all those people.
Mullets.
Come here, mullets, yeah. My name is Jessa Phillips. I run goodtobegeek.com. I talk at conventions like this up and down the East Coast. Yay! Primarily about sci-fi and race and gender issues and video games. But I'm also a podcaster. Who knew? Podcasting a thing. Yeah, so... but we talk about all things geek, basically anything we have a passion for, so this definitely falls in there.
Awesome. This is the panel I call After Jeopardy. I just did an hour of Marvel DC Jeopardy where I am projecting to 350 people for an hour and nonstop talking, so my voice is a little rough. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I've written 14 novels, the most recent of which will be out in about a couple of weeks, the eighth volume in the Sentinel series. I have two copies of this one left if anybody's interested, my superhero series. I am a professor of history and political science at Southwestern Illinois, and I am the host of the White Rocket Podcast. We're a bunch of podcasting sons of guns up here.
Yeah, we are.
Oh, yeah. And we're here to talk about two shows that were packaged together as part of the Action Hour, Jack of All Trades and Cleopatra, 25-25. If anyone who was at the sing-along last night, we did do the Cleopatra song.
I missed out. Dang.
Oh, man. The theme song, my only regret about that theme song is that it's so short. it is so short. We needed more awesome.
That's true. But you compare it with Jack of All Trades, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
Because Jacko is one...
It does go one step
one
longer than it is.
Of course, yeah.
But the Jack of All Trades theme won an Emmy.
Yes.
Yes, it did. So,
yeah, it did.
Yep.
So which one leads off? Which one are we talking about first?
I think Jack.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Jack first, and then 30-minute mark, whether we're done or not.
So I'll participate in this panel for 30 minutes, and then I'll step back and let you guys talk about in the year 25-25.
All right, so in 1801,
the revolution had been run, and Uncle Sam's favorite son had a job to do.
From Jack to a lady, but beautiful old sort, who found a 6-inch ring, a
had been won, and Uncle Sam's favorite son had a job he needed done.
Which brought Jack to a lady, both beautiful and smart, who found his mix intriguing.
A scoundrel with a heart. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, there was never a Lebanon graver like Darren Dragoon is he.
And it goes on like that for like another half hour.
Yeah, so, Bruce Campbell.
There you go.
In one of his many Bruce Campbell
chins
characters.
Could kill.
Yes. And let's face it, Bruce Campbell's a lot like John Wayne. Bruce Campbell plays Bruce Campbell.
I wondered where that was going.
Bruce Campbell.
Totally anachronistically. Every other character is in that year. He is in the year 2000.
And it's odd you say that because this show works so hard on its historical accuracy.
I think my favorite term to
the Statue of Liberty was totally in Palau Palau. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. So who here actually watched Jack of All Trades? Raise your hands. For those who did not see the glory and amazingness of this show, Jack, our main character played by the wonderful Bruce Campbell, is on a mission for the American government in Palau Palau,
to stop the French
because Napoleon and stuff.
Yes. I was like, man, cash in that paycheck.
You had a question you forgot?
Yeah.
Well, it'll come back.
It'll come back.
So this show, you know, as a history major, I
exactly.
I don't even know where to begin
exactly
with this show. But I think my favorite, explanation of if you're going to mess around with time and put historical figures and stuff in your show, Tumblr has a great term for that called "go full on Xena." If you're going to do this, go full on Xena. And they did.
Oh, yeah.
So, quite literally.
This was on at 8, right? This aired at 8 p.m.?
Well, it depended. It was part of the syndicated action hour.
Right. I was going to say, mine was
Xena.
Saturday morning.
So it depended on who aired it and when.
And where
I
you lived.
It, and I thought I remember that it was 8 p.m. And when I was rewatching it, here... I was surprised by how raunchy it was.
It is a farce.
Holy cow.
I did not.
It's not innuendo. It's not
that
subtle.
Sexual.
No. Mira watched it with me, my 8-year-old Mira. Now, to be fair, Mira has seen every James Bond movie multiple times and can recite, and she can guess the movie based on the first 3 seconds of the theme song. Yes. But I'm sitting there, and I'm like hoping her mom doesn't walk in from shopping or something while we're watching. I'm thinking, it's like a cartoon, but dang. Yes. Like they have the Marquis de Sade episode. Oh my God.
Yeah, and give it up to the guy who played the governor.
Yes. Oh, he,
in that role.
He laid it on the line. He was Colonel Clink from, you know,
they totally committed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very much, it's a sex farce, but it's in that same vein of where it's on two levels where a lot of your younger people aren't going to...
They're not going to remotely get it, right.
And the adults are going, I can't believe they said that.
Exactly.
They went there?
Yeah, they go there a lot. Yeah.
They have a chateau there.
Yes, yes.
This time around, I was like, they got away with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Filming in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and again, one of the things that, you know, it's filming in New Zealand, so, and it's by the same company that brought us Herc and Xena, so you're sitting there going... Oh my God, Nardo is played by... It's Aeolus! Oh my God, Aeolus is the descendant of Leonardo da Vinci. Everything makes sense now.
And an interesting sidebar on that is the guys who were the producers on that show were the producers of Xena, season 5, which a lot of people didn't like. And there were a lot of people who think that, okay, Jack was their punishment. They got sent over there.
But it's so wonderful. I mean, yeah, as a history professor, that's what pulled me in. Well, I wasn't fully admitted back then, but when it first aired, I remember seeing it. And just the premise alone, I went, Thomas Jefferson's secret agent, Bruce Campbell, fighting mini me Napoleon. When Napoleon rolls out the first time, roll the red carpet out, and the red carpet, he pops out, and I'm just like... Because Napoleon is my favorite historical figure. And it's mini-me. I'm like, no. And
if you're going to make a short joke about Napoleon, again, this show, let's go all the way.
Yeah, really, exactly. You couldn't have gotten any more not little, not tall. There's no more tall. There's no more, that's it. If there had been an actor in Hollywood or New Zealand shorter than Vern Troyer, he would have been Napoleon. Yes.
And he does a great job playing a French villain.
He's great.
Oh, yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
Everyone in this show is great. You know, from I love Jack's, I can't remember her name now, but his partner,
Amelia Rothschild.
Yeah, Amelia Rothschild and her inventions.
Yes,
that was a mess.
It's a steampunk show a lot of the time.
Yes, absolutely
awesome. Really,
it really is amazing.
She's a scientist and a chemist, and she knows all this stuff.
That was the most heartbreaking episode when her father comes to town to help.
Oh,
you know, because he can help. He's the real spy.
Yeah.
I'm like, and he undercuts her, and I'm like, what are you doing? We spent all this time building her up. In her own right. I mean, from the get-go, as soon as you meet her, and then her dad comes along.
They make everything about her trying to please dad.
Right.
Which is sad.
Now, there's a lot, actually, so there aren't two, like, there are a lot of women in the show, and of course, you know, and, like, as far as people who have speaking roles, Amelia is the number one female character, but all the other women I noticed, they bring in are villains,
mm-hmm.
and... And not only are they villains, but they're villains with high sexual appetites.
That's true.
And I'm just sitting there going, oh my god, we got like this weird Madonna horror complex because Amelia never like sleeps with anybody. Mm-mm. Like she doesn't get romantic with anybody. She's like basically she is devoted to the memory of her dead husband. And
She's uptight British.
And then you bring in,
Do the task.
Yeah, and then you bring in, like, Catherine the Great, and I'm like, oh, you're making all the horse jokes.
Kentucky
again.
Sue. My daughter's Kentucky favorite Sue, character is Kentucky Sue, because when she went up to Jack and went, punched him and knocked him out, she's like,
true partner.
I was like, those are some really deep thoughts I'm having. I should bring them up at the panel instead of posting about it on Facebook, because no one will get it on Facebook.
But, you know, it's the realism of the show in some areas. Like they get their orders from a talking parrot in a tricorn hat. Jean-Claude. I love Jean-Claude. Vive la resistance!
Well, he's a pirate.
And he drinks.
He's a pirate parrot. He has to have a hat.
He does, his little vest.
I love what he got when he was talking about his night of debauchery and then he got a tattoo. And it's like, where's your tattoo? Well, not until the second date. I'm like, what?
Yeah, that was like the one episode where he got an extended subplot for a second. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're going to go the Jean-Claude route. He's going to have a plot in this episode. Then he kind of flew off. I'm like, oh man. Yeah, that's unbelievable.
I would have killed for a Jean-Claude episode.
Absolutely.
I would have loved more backstory on Jean-Claude the parrot.
How do you become a revolutionary parrot?
Yeah.
So do we have favorite episodes?
Ooh. They're all so good. Yeah, honestly, you know, I wouldn't have said this at the time I was watching them, but looking back now, like Gary said, the ones where the governor really get, like the one where the governor's in prison and Jack has to get put to prison to help him and everything.
Crokey and the Pokey.
Crokey and the Pokey.
The titles on these episodes.
Yeah.
I kind of like the monkey.
With the monkey statue.
And the monkey statue.
Oh, right. They end up with three. Yeah, yeah. They end up making extras so that everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy.
I like the grave robbing that episode where she dies and comes back.
As a zombie, like she comes out like haunting them, and that was great.
All these are really great random episodes, and then you know it was over.
And then it was over.
22,
I feel like it was
favorite.
after the love potion episode.
Oh, the love potion.
That was sort of like for me. It's like, okay, well.
They had really good chemistry.
It was. It was great. And then it was a little bit too much after that. Where it was like, oh, it's too conflicted. It got serious.
Ratings.
But instead of creating another show, they just made Cleopatra 2525 fill an hour.
But we'll get to that in a moment. But yeah, another question, comment.
They're repairing things like the tick.
And you'll note almost all of them only had about one season. I mean, except for Babylon 5, Hercules and Xena. Almost all that 90s era syndication stuff did not stick. It was very rare for it to go beyond the first season, and if it got one and if it got two, that was a miracle.
I mean, technically Jack and Cleopatra had two.
That's
but
true,
because
they were split in half.
But I will say, you're rewatching the series, and the last episode is the harem episode.
Yes.
Which has a really kind of neat feminist message, but at the same time, it's brown face.
Yeah.
And you're just like, you did so many great things on this show, and then you did so many things that were not great.
Right. Yeah.
But you win some, you lose some.
You know,
it was the 90s.
It was the 90s.
The ending of that episode is so bittersweet, too, because I guess they didn't necessarily know it was the last episode when they filmed it.
Yeah.
But at the end, he says to her, I'll be right back. And he runs off, and she's just kind of sitting back, like waiting on him, and that's where it ends, you know, and they never comes back.
She's eternally waiting.
Eternally waiting, right, yeah.
Got too serious.
Which one?
Sorry, what?
Soap.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the show is that they tried to do anything on the side of it.
Nobody's ever done anything with it.
I don't think they did anything after that.
No.
There hasn't been any comics or movie.
It would make a great comic book. I'm surprised they've never done a comic with it.
I'm not.
Well, no, I mean, like one of those indie companies or something would have.
But again, rewatching the show has firmly convinced me that every single one of Bruce Campbell's characters are somehow related. Every single one from
it's just reincarnated
from Metallicus to Ash to Briscoe County Jr. to Odin.
Yeah. So you're just seeing like the family tree.
Yeah.
And Briscoe is the most competent of them. I think
no Santa Claus is.
Yeah, that's true.
Santa Claus and the Librarians. Did everyone see that episode?
Yeah, that was the episode
that really hooked me on that show. Oddly enough, it was him and then making me cry at the end. But Bruce Campbell characters, the scoundrels with a heart. That's just what he does.
Elvis and Bubba
Hotep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You got to run around South Beach for 6 years.
Right. Yeah, Burn Notice.
That's a great show. But we're not here to talk about that.
We're here to talk about how awesome Jack of All Trades is. You can get the whole series on Amazon.
Okay, so Jesse, what was your favorite episode, did you say?
Love Potion.
Okay. What's everybody's favorite villain?
The governor's wife.
Yeah, she put Croaky in the pokey.
Yeah, she did.
I gotta say Napoleon, but I do think the governor is great. He's kind of a villain. You like him, but you know he's still the villain.
Isn't he too incompetent to be a villain?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
He's in that Roscoe P. Coltrane era.
Right.
Yeah, he's incompetent. But if they replaced him, we might actually have someone we have to deal with. Yeah.
So they were always helping him, right?
Yeah.
And who was his assistant?
Yeah. The captain?
What's his name?
Captain Brochard.
I just love them trying to do their French accent as Frenchy goofy as possible.
Like these stereotypical
every time they say, a war is like these, you know.
I will speak to you with an outrageous French accent.
I was thinking of the opera episode.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was good. Especially when they made Bruce's character, the Brigadier.
Daring Dragoon.
Thank you. I couldn't. When they made, they should cast the short, fat guy as the dragoon. Bruce is just like,
that's not how I look.
I love that bit, and when someone else was in parody, it was playing him while he couldn't. He's like, I don't say things like that. I don't do things like that.
I love the Amelia. Yes. The daring dragoon. It's like, oh my god, if she did a spot on daring,
yes.
She was
perfect. You know who really committed was the guy playing the pirate.
Oh,
my Lord. He couldn't go
foul.
A second without his face just making 15 different...
Yo, and I did a cream puffs.
Oh, no, the Lewis and Clark episode.
Yes. Those guys.
I didn't necessarily love the main content of the episode, but at the end when they send them off with Pocahontas...
Yeah.
Sacagawea.
Or send them...
Yeah.
Duh, wow.
I had some pie before the pie. But you know, at first they're making her speak in broken English, and I'm like,
right.
Oh no, this is terrible. And then she's like, you know, I find out when I'm forceful, they're gonna behave better.
Yes,
like, yes, girl. So funny.
That's kind of what George III was like too. Remember, he was goofy the whole time. And at the end, he says, the only way to outwit Napoleon is to
be unpredictable.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, he did that switch really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's so many fantastic little things in this show that, you know, upon rewatching, you're going through and going, like, yeah, A, they got away with it. B, you know, it was far more clever than people gave it credit for.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just a joy to watch in that very weird sort
of way. I still remember it was like when we were doing the rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
It was about like the second or third episode when it finally clicked to me, okay, yeah, this is a sex farce. It's a complete and utter farce, and then I was able to roll with it a lot better.
That's right. That's true.
At first I was like expecting some kind of like Bruce Campbell adventure thing, whatever, and then like, oh, okay, this is where we are. I got you now.
This is what this is.
Yes. And they did it perfectly. I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, they nailed the tone, the will they, won't they, and again, I really wonder if Napoleon showed up because so much, he was like, if he was only supposed to show up once, they were like, This is gold.
Because he's done it several times. Like,
yeah,
what,
like
three or four or five times.
He,
yeah.
A lot of episodes. Once he shows up the first time, he's there almost like every other episode.
It's amazing. Yeah. I just love the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
I'm just like, oh no, they didn't do that. No, no.
You know they wrote the whole episode just
to get to that. Just to get to that point where they, if you don't know, they find the Statue of Liberty half buried in the beach, and Napoleon's on his knees going, "You did it!"
Because he was still doing it as the gift to America, but it was a Trojan horse that was going to be full of French soldiers that were all going
to... Because Napoleon famously was trying to invade America. I don't know. It wasn't, you know, it was that historical accuracy like that. It just made it for me.
Again, yeah, once you let it go and just realize it's gone full Xena, just, you know,
yeah.
Just roll with it.
Yeah.
Who was it that got kidnapped and he was like, for the whole rest of the episode, couldn't say or move. He was just in so much shock.
Was it Ben Franklin?
No, Ben Franklin was just drinking.
They did put a lot of historical figures in it. I was amazed. Yeah, Catherine the Great, Lewis and Clark, Blackbeard, Napoleon.
I'm pretty sure they took, like, a history book.
They're just from the general area. We're just like, this one.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
All right. They're just going to close their eyes.
Yeah.
Like, just going to think.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how I think they wrote the show.
And it was effective. It was totally effective.
Or those dice. Like, what if Napoleon tries to invade America?
But we need an invention to go with it.
From the Marquis de Sade.
With a
Trojan horse. I love that's the resort.
Yeah.
That was the
secret island.
Like,
the Marquis de Sade episode was, I think one of the things I loved about that was kind of seeing the power exchange dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, yes, of course the governor is such a bottom. And
well, and the other thing I liked about that is they were like, didn't make the kinky people be just weird. It's like, that's what they're into.
Yeah.
You know, they
just roll with
it. They didn't kink shame them.
Sure, and then they came back to the island. They were mostly just like, okay,
that happened.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about it, but we'll just keep moving on.
Close I got doors. A little gift from the Marquis.
Although it always bothered me that they were supposed to be holding down the fort while the governor and captain were at the resort. And I'm like, you don't wonder who's watching the house? They've arrived on the island.
Just let it go.
Okay.
Let it go.
Roll with it. It's fine.
It'll be fine.
Everything's fine.
And I have a question, though. Is that... it may be foolish to ask any questions about the show. I understand that. I may be self-defeating, but where was this island supposed to be? The Caribbean, the South Pacific. It sounds like a South Pacific island, but I got the sense it was closer to the United States.
South Pacific.
Like,
no, it was close enough to be within range of Lewis and Clark to get there by canoe.
That's what exactly.
So you may be overthinking.
That's why I said it must be somewhere.
I thought it was like the
meanwhile,
Caribbean
you never see
or maybe
a canoe.
It's somewhere in the middle of the Missouri River, I think.
They were really, really bad at expeditions.
It wasn't routine.
Yeah, the geography made no sense at all, but that's okay.
Where is it? Redang, Island Palau, Redang. It's Malaysia. Like, I think, well, that's what, when Googling Palau, Palau pulls up some random resort in Malaysia.
When you think French jumping off point for invasion of America, you think Malaysia, right? First Malaysia, and then the world!
Any quick questions on this?
Yeah, any questions from the audience?
Oh my god,
comments,
things you want us to giggle about?
We
have the best words.
It's only Friday, kids.
Yeah.
It's gonna get better from here.
So, do we have a favorite invention or innovation, Miss Rothschild?
The sub.
Yeah,
I love the sub.
No, I loved her holographic fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
smoke and mirrors.
That was very cool.
Yeah.
But also her bulletproof cape.
Yes. Bulletproof cape.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, dude, she was ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can always count on if we saw an invention at the beginning of the episode.
Yep.
It's going to save the day.
That's exactly.
If you get into trouble, then write a device to get him out of it. That's what you give it at the beginning.
Yep. Just roll with it.
I did love the episode when they were with Lewis and Clark again, when they were tied up in the basement, and the stuff starts to go wrong, and she's like, we don't want this to happen. He's like, why? Because then this would happen. And then this would happen. And cut to the end. Oh, and then we blow up. Okay, now it's a problem.
Let me spell it out for you.
Yep. And like all Bruce Campbell characters, he's just clever enough to be dangerous, but does not realize how stupid he is.
And that's what makes him awesome.
Yes.
You like his brilliant gambling scheme. All right,
we've hit the 30-minute mark.
All right.
In the year 2525, there are women with the will to survive.
500 years into the future, she will enter a world where machines rule the earth. Mankind has been driven underground. And Cleopatra is about to discover it. There's no place like home.
In the year 2525, there are women with the will to survive. Fighting for a brand new day. Nothing's gonna get in their way.
It's so bad. It's so terrible.
And it's Gina Torres.
Gina Torres.
Yeah.
Who knew Clear right. Scream could be effective, though?
Oh, my God. So, I'm starting to watch the show, and I'm just like, is Cleo going to scream in every episode? So, so how many of you watched Cleopatra 25?
Almost all Cleopatra.
Yeah.
All right, cool, so we don't have to go over the premise.
We'll just go, no, the premise is golden.
Okay, golden.
All right, so Cleopatra was an exotic dancer in the late 20th century, yeah. Early 21st, and she goes in for a simple boob job and ends up cryogenically frozen because, whoops.
Happens. And, known side effect.
Totally standard procedure.
Standard procedure. 500 years later, she is awakened and ends up joining a band of freedom fighters.
Mankind has been driven underground.
And Cleopatra will soon find out there's no place like home. So I keep, like, my friends are like, what is this show? So then I give them the premise, and they're like, really? And I'm like, yes. Absolutely. This show is amazing. What are you talking about?
And I have to say, for a TNA action show, it is far better than it had any right to be, both in scripts and seriousness at times.
Yeah, well, I mean, just like I had forgotten how raunchy Jack was, I forgot how deep this show actually got at times, especially... with Gina Torres' character.
Yeah, Gina Torres' character.
And what they give her and her whole storyline with her dad and, like, who did what and who's to blame for what and the relationship with Kral?
Cregan.
The pie. Yeah, then there's a lot going on there. And then, you know, Cregan turns out to be George Bailey.
Right, go Cregan, man.
The Baileys, and, like, there's a lot.
There's a
and
lot.
And yet it leaves that big question with the whole voice situation. You're like,
yeah.
We all want to know. What is going on?
Yeah.
How do they know voice?
It's amazing that they actually went there with the Can We Trust voice
in
the series.
Yeah, there was, again, it was, it turned out to be a really cool, you know, astonishingly clever science fiction show. You know, especially in the second season when they really kind of let loose with the science, the part of the science fiction.
There's actually a lot of really interesting world building in there, with the tunnels and the jumping down the levels and
even when they do the artificial,
The fact that the Baileys.
This one is 1950s U.S., this one is a fart. Like, what? That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, the Baileys, the big bad ant robots that were actually terraforming and had succeeded. They had made the Earth livable.
Yeah, basically it was like WALL-E. WALL-E had gone crazy and decided that humanity was awful. And if he hadn't discovered the power of musicals.
Hello, Dolly.
WALL-E. That's what I was thinking of. So I was like, if he hadn't discovered Hello, Dolly, maybe WALL-E would have been like this. But no, I loved, you know, again, it has some really great serious moments. Like, they had this running gag where Sarge really wanted to sleep with Mauser, but Mauser wasn't programmed for sex because reasons. And there's that one episode where she tries to inject sex programming, and it overrides his current programming because he used to be a betrayer robot. And then they follow him. It's like, oh my God, is his mission to go kill Voice? And you find out that no, he just went home to his wife.
Yeah.
And it's a great kind of moment that Sarge has with, I shouldn't really have done this without your consent. Because bringing in issues of would you have consented to it, or if I wasn't trying to reprogram you? And they really don't address that ever again, because they go back to, ha ha, Sarge wants to sleep with him again. Mm-hmm. But not nearly as much.
Yeah.
But that was like, that was not a place I expected this show to go. I mean,
even when they have to kill the betrayer robot in, right, the classic Rockwell Christmas, and it turns out to be the girl's dad, and you're like, well, do you not? Like, but then, unfortunately, they do, but we all have to be okay with it. And, you know, the mom gets over it, and it's like, well, maybe it's a little too soon for you to be hanging around yet, but in the future, we'll see you.
Yeah. It went in a number of really great places, and then you have weird episodes where it's like, did they visit every like fetish store in the area to get all of the outfits for that episode? Because I swear to God, they did. And there
all you need is exotic dancing and karaoke. Just saying.
You know, and you're sitting there going, there are things I'm never going to be able to unsee now. So thank you, Cleopatra 2525.
But you know what else? Rewatching it recently, but at times it made me think about Farscape.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because in the same way that John would throw out these pop culture references that nobody else knew, Cleopatra did the same thing.
Yeah.
And more often than not, it was actually relevant and helped them figure out how to get out of their situation.
Yeah, and I love how, you know, I took
we
a semester.
We should ask Brian Henson if he watched that show for inspiration.
But you know, I love how I took a semester in acting. I know he's totally acting.
Yeah.
Like she had these random oddball things that she'd mention that she did when back in the day.
Or when she kicks the other stripper off the stripper pole.
Yeah. This is how it's
That's
done.
Right. You knew it.
And then I'm like, actually, that is also not how it's done. But okay.
She does a fairly chaste stripping.
Yeah, it's a very, very chaste, striptease without a whole lot of acrobats on the pole. Like I've seen YouTube. Like there's lots of stuff you could do. Just saying.
And
this might be a little bit more about Tegan's viewing.
Yes,
I'm
saying Barbarella.
I love some of the other things that we do, like when we had the other Voice team captain guy who'd been thawed out.
Yeah.
And he had the pistol.
Gun? Yeah.
And the fact that they brought that up, that, you know, okay, we're trying to stop this one guy and he's got these shields and it's like, oh our laser, we can't stop him. He just plugs it because his shield's great against lasers, but hey, here.
But the slow blade penetrates the shield.
Oh, very good. Nice.
Thank you.
I thought that was a great bit.
Yeah, I love that. And then they were talking about how they'd outlawed gunpowder.
Yes.
So it was a black market thing because of reasons.
Yeah. Well, the CDC episode.
Oh yeah, the Bureau of Health episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was fantastic in that we're going to create viruses that only we can cure. And I'm like, I've seen that plot so many times.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, way to go! And I'm really happy Cleo found a guy because he was a cool guy.
Yeah.
I was like, man, if the show had gone on, I hope he would be a recurring character.
It was very noir, very well done noir.
Yeah, Noir Never is the name of that episode.
Yes.
Noir Never. Yeah, very clever episode titles.
All right, so Cleopatra, Sarge, or
Hell. I would follow Hell into Hell.
How's that a question?
I mean, it's Gina Torres. And I love her talking about Rob Tapert. Being of her physique and going into Hollywood, they didn't know what to do with her. And he was like, "Well, I'm going to just put a weapon in your hand, and we're going to just, you know, scare the crap out of everybody because you're awesome." and that's you know, I think why she was held, the intrepid leader of this trio of awesome. And I love how Hel and Sarge really kind of understood Cleo in their own way and what Cleo's strengths were. Because that came up in the episodes when you dealt with other voice teams and
yes.
their leadership style. It's like, no, Cleo's not good at this stuff. Cleo's good at this stuff. No, we have to train her to do this. But okay. You'll see how it works.
But also when they bench Hel because she's deigned
yeah.
question voice, you know, just this idea that she's the leader and you're willing to put her aside because she dared question what was going on. It's like, okay.
Again, the fact that they went there to have the lead character go and question voice and made it a legitimate where we
yeah.
as the audience were going, maybe
yeah.
we shouldn't trust voice.
Yeah, and then
right.
you get to the end of the and then you get to
what
the end of the series and it's like, maybe we shouldn't trust voice because she now has all this information she has learned and is telling no one anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there
always like, I'll tell you what you need to know.
And it's like, yes.
How do you get to decide that?
Every time Paul challenges her, it's, well, we'll discuss it later.
Yeah.
And then she finds out more, well, we'll discuss it later. Like, I wouldn't trust that.
Yeah. And no wonder Hel goes,
which is great when she right teams up with Cregan for
yeah.
a bit to, like, well, yeah, that makes sense. He knows more and he's willing to share a little bit more.
Yeah. Oh, my God, Cregan.
Yeah, we got to talk about him for a minute because that character should not work.
That character should not work.
He should totally not work. He's a scary clown.
He's a scary clown. And then the more you see him, the go, you know, maybe he's not scary as much as I feel very conflicted right now. I'm going to just not think about the implications because clowns are weird. But still, I'm like, you know, you're brilliant and psychotic, but in a way that is understandable, not in a Joker, I just want to watch the world burn. Like, you can see the method under the madness.
But you know what? That's another trope for that time in TV.
Yeah.
Right?
That's why he was strife.
Morbius in Farscape. You've got a lot of just kind of unhinged villains.
Yeah, and
with a point.
Yeah.
And again, the clown makeup and everything, it shouldn't have worked as well as it did.
Uh-huh.
And I think
it's a beautiful costume.
It's a beautiful costume, and you're sitting going, why is that turning somehow attractive? Like, I don't know what's wrong. Again, like these.
I didn't have that reaction, but sure, we'll go.
Dude, it's late at night, you've had a couple of glasses of wine, you're watching Cleopatra 2525 and marathoning it for the panel, and you're like, no, Craig's not so bad after all, considering the other, you know, characters you've seen on the show. Like, other, you know, the mutants and stuff, like Sluggo.
Oh,
like, you know, you could do worse than Cregan.
When Cregan's the best option.
Cregan, yeah. I love the body swap episode.
Oh,
that was
the body swap
funny.
Episode was
the body
so
swap
good.
Episode. And I love, they did such a great job of mimicking each other's physicality.
They really did.
And voice and the creepy smile. Well,
and
it's like, how did you not know that was Cregan in Hel's body?
Well, and the other thing for me, also that I loved about it is the fact that Hel as Cregan still tried to fight like Hel, still did the kick, you know, still did the spin.
His body's not
as
flexible.
It's a very flippy, jumpy show.
which
she was
doing
that, and it's like, yeah, you're not as bendy as you were in the
yeah.
other body.
Are you feeling
that?
Okay?
I did love the, do I look like that?
But you know what else this did when it aired? This was, if you count Voice and Mauser as being cast members, this is a cast of five,
yeah.
four of whom are women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was practically unheard of.
It still
and
is.
And I'm pretty positive that every single episode passes the Bechdel test.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one does.
Which, you know, almost nothing does that. The Bechdel test, I end up giving this explanation a lot during Dragon Con. The Bechdel test was created by cartoonist Alison Bechdel, and it started out as a joke in her comic strip where one of the characters is saying that she will only go see a movie if it contains two female characters, both of which have names. So that's criteria number one. Criteria number two is that they talk to each other. Number three, about something other than a man. It's a really low bar.
It is a low bar.
And a lot of,
and a
can't
lot
pass
of things
it.
Can't pass it.
That means you seem to watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
So yeah, this has been sort of adopted into media criticism, and it passing it doesn't necessarily mean that a movie is feminist, and failing it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not.
but when you look at everything that's like made in a year or over a decade, and you see how few things pass, you really get a bigger picture of the media landscape and how underrepresented women are in media.
Yeah, there's that one, and I like the sexy lamp.
Yeah, yeah. If the character can be replaced with a lamp and not change the story, that is the sexy lamp test.
So,
the final episode, okay, they get up to the surface, boom, out the door, and then...
The big Baileys.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What happens is the worst cliffhanger in TV.
Right. Yeah. There's like, I went online and I'm like, you know, for a lot of other shows that have ended on cliffhangers, the creators and stuff have gone on and explained what they were going to do next. If they had continued and whatnot. So I was like... Please tell me they did something like that for Cleopatra 2525, because I am more bitter about that cancellation than I am about Fireflies, because Firefly got closure, okay? Firefly got its movie, but
The story was complete.
They were done. But Cleopatra 2525, you end on this massive cliffhanger. They're going to this, like, full frontal assault on the Baileys, which is a terrible idea.
Especially knowing that if, you know, the whole way Krieger/Bailey set it up...
Yeah.
Yeah, and yes, you have the cannons now, but I don't think they're going to work the way you think they're going to work, and you're not communicating effectively with the rest of your teams because you keep keeping
things
close
to the chest. That's your only weapon.
So what is going to happen next? Like this, what? Yeah. Nothing? The internet has given me nothing?
My headcanon is this
what
is
happens
also
to the dwarves? No, it's I like your idea of making it Zoe's fever dream, but at the same time, she wouldn't have a fever dream without Wash.
Maybe that's Cleopatra.
Once again, I'm so you start rewatching the show, and God, Cleopatra screams so much. So many screaming, and I'm just like, please tell me her screaming is gonna stop. Like, you're, at some point, they're gonna be like, okay, Cleo's gotta be used to going down shafts now. I mean, she should be used to going down shafts already. But on fish.
It is not time yet to end.
There are no kids in the room. It's okay. Engage the audience.
Jump start.
Hand up. Disagree about the Cleopatra screaming thing, because you have this juxtaposition between two extremely badass women.
Yeah.
And you have this woman that's very clearly a 20th century woman thrown into this environment.
Like,
so yeah, she's going to be terrified.
She's going to be terrified, but after a certain point, she's got to acclimate.
Like 6 months passed throughout the entire series. Like, it's not a lot of time.
But
like, to be honest, she may scream, but she always does it.
That's true.
She will scream, she will be afraid, but then she will knuckle up and she will do it.
And they did make the
she's
scream effective in one episode.
I just, the screaming got to me.
It did to me too.
It just got to me. Okay.
But I agree. But I like that when Hell's Sister comes along, that they form that bond.
Sarge's sister.
Yeah.
Oh, Sarge's sister.
Sarge's sister.
I think they're both named after flowers.
Lily and Rose. But I was like, okay, so she's been down there, what, 2 months? And then Sarge is just like, okay, we'll see you at the bar later. What? Like, this poor young girl has no idea
about life
underground.
And that's another piece of the world history, the world building, is that we have people on the surface still.
That worship the Baileys as gods.
Yeah.
And sacrifice to them.
Yeah. And also, as with Jack of all trades, they also have the occasional star from their show, and this Martin Chokosh. Showed up, and I was like, okay, so there's only two ways this can go right now. Either he is definitely going to be a bad guy, or he's going to be a bad guy who's going to be redeeming himself. That's the only two things he does, except for Celeborn, but Celeborn is questionable in Lord of the Rings. You never know what elves are up to. So, but I was like, he's either going to go Boreas or Yuri on us, and it was Yuri. So, sorry. I just love seeing him in things, though, because he's so pretty.
That's why you keep him around.
I kind of see it as something that's going to make it. I saw the
Yeah, you kind of wonder if the Wachowskis saw the... like, you wonder how many people actually watched Cleopatra 2525 and how it influenced their later works.
Everyone did.
Stuff they just forgot
about it.
Awesome ideas in it.
What's your favorite idea that came out of there that they did? And let's put that on the spot.
Favorite idea that they came up with.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of the underground levels and terraforming in different ways and people choosing the environment that they want to live in like that, and the how society would change when you can't return to the surface.
The mutations, and that we don't think anything about, that there is a cat running the cryo lab.
And his
that was
buddy.
Great, yeah. Like, just like, it's every day. But, yeah, I mean, you give it enough time, sure, why not? A dwarf has cat.
Yeah. No, I liked when they introduced the, trying to introduce a more centralized law system.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's like, man, I can just imagine if that had gone on more seasons, you would have seen more cracks in that facade.
Yeah.
Because it was turning into some Judge Dredd stuff.
Right.
You know,
execution. It's debate, right, execution. Oh, okay.
Okay, straight to execution, that's how we do.
Yeah. And I did love Cleo's going, yeah, he's terrible, but we shouldn't...
He's terrible. Yes, I love her protesting his execution. And Cregan is a character, and his motivations, definitely was something that you don't necessarily get to see every day. Usually they're the ones who come up with the humanity as a parasite and I want them exterminated. And he was like, no, I just wanted to clean up the planet. And then they decided that humanity was a parasite that should die. And I was like, you know, you're right.
Yeah. You brought me around to your point.
Yeah, that's that can't argue.
Yeah, you're right. People suck. I can't argue with that.
Yeah, so hey, let's just roll with it. That you don't see that every day.
Man?
You didn't watch it.
No, I got through Jack of All Trades, but I only made it through like the first two episodes of Cleopatra.
Yeah,
you
need
to be easy for you to pick
time. Yeah, I guess just the whole premise was just interesting to me. I do want to get to finish it, but I didn't have access to it. I had to get it off of YouTube.
Gotcha.
But I love the idea that she's getting boob surgery. I mean, the show, like you say, it's like if it's going to go there, it's going to go there. Both shows. It's like if she's going to have some reason to be lost in the future, then why not it be that, you know, as opposed to some more legitimate, like she had cancer and they froze her or something, you know.
Yeah, and I also, other random episode that I really liked was when she had that, you know, she was putting the tube, the stasis tube.
21st century.
Yeah, you know, and she, you know, it was the kind of dream sequence episode, you know. And you find out the reason she was in there and having that particular, you know, experience was because her boyfriend had decided to cryo-freeze himself, but they thawed him 50 years too early. So he was trying to reunite with Cleo in the only way he could.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she figures it out and says, why didn't you just tell me? And they take them out of stasis, and there he is, and he's, you know,
old
close
and
to death.
Yeah.
And this is the only way you'd want to be with me again. And it's really kind of sweet, actually.
Yeah. And
I mean, not the kidnapping and, like, mental invasion part.
But let's
clarify,
right? We'll
talk about it later.
Yeah,
right?
Sorry.
Yeah, but the thing about both shows is they both really grabbed their premise with both hands and squeezed to, you know, Jack of All Trades kind of squeezed the lower extremity. Cleo went more into the actual sci-fi and got more serious.
Yeah.
And both, I think, were great shows because of that, and were benefited from kind of going, you know what, hell with it, run with it.
Let's just do it. We'll do it live. And when like I said before, when they canceled Jack of All Trades, they just gave Cleo the full hour. So the last six episodes or so are an hour long.
Yeah. I'm sitting there watching, like, this feels longer.
Which was a surprise when I had six episodes left. It was up until 3 a.m. But that's also when they really start getting deep into Tahel's character.
Yeah.
And she teams up with Cregan, and she's trying to figure out what happened to her dad. And I almost feel like if they had had a full hour from the beginning, that this could have been like a semi-long-running, really well-loved sci-fi show.
Yeah,
they were really hampered by being 15, because it was like, they had a few jokes, get in, get out.
Yeah, that's one of the things they, if you look it up on Wikipedia and something and stuff, they were talking about how, of the two shows, Cleopatra 2525 is the more popular one, people were really into the sci-fi aspects. But again, as with many things that are awesome, it did not last.
And you had a question of there, was there fanfic, or we read the fanfic? I'm sure there is.
I'm not going there.
We did all just rewatch the series because
I did find online Jack of All Trades fan fiction.
Yeah, that I'm sure there's
fan fiction.
But you know, I don't know if there's as much of a thriving fan community as we would like. Because again, it was kind of
the one season, and
it was one and
a
half, yeah, technically.
Yeah. I'm trying to.
We'll be expecting. talk to me after I finally finish my multi-chapter Dragon Age Inquisition fanfic, and we'll see. We'll see if I can whip something up.
Imagine if it had gone the other way, though, and it had been Cleopatra that had gotten canceled, and Jack of All Trades had gone to an hour.
I don't think
it would have. Right. I don't. I think it needed to be bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
A farce has to be quick, punchy.
It's timing. Yes.
Yeah. Either you do an hour and a half movie and you're out, or you have to do your 22 minutes.
I think
farce cannot stand up for long.
They'd have had to just do two episodes.
The half hour was great for Jack.
Exactly.
But
in the end, when it got more serious, it was like,
no, they'd have had to just do two back-to-back rather than doing one long. Because
yeah.
I was surprised when you said that they took Cleopatra to an hour. I'm thinking, man, that's a dramatic, no pun intended, that's a dramatic change because...
Yeah. And it was, yes.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because
yeah, the tone shifted ever so slightly. Yeah. And again, I think the show definitely benefited from being longer for the end.
And the biggest problem the show had was the fact that it was syndicated.
Yeah.
Right. I think being in syndication, so nobody knew exactly when it was going to be on, it wasn't on the same time everywhere, and you didn't know if they were going to play it in order. I mean, I was talking before the panel, of that group of shows, there were these two, there was Hercules and Xena, and then on the PTN, and I think there was one more on this network, but I can't remember.
Andromeda?
PTN, Andromeda.
Andromeda.
And on
yeah.
PTN, there was Babylon 5, Tech War, and some Baywatch show, I think, I forget what it was, but... Of all of the series, only Babylon 5 went 5 years.
And had Crusade afterwards.
Yeah.
And it had to go to TNT for the fifth year.
Hercules and Xena both lasted.
It only was in syndication 4 years. I mean, Babylon 5 had to go to a network to stay on the fifth year, yeah.
Right.
I thought these started after one of them ended.
It was, yeah, but I'm saying it got... PTN went away.
Hercules ended.
It had to go TNT.
These started after something ended in this place. At least where I live.
It took the place,
Yeah, I think it was Hercules that ended first.
But again, if you don't give a show a consistency, if you don't give a consistent schedule, you know, you're not going to get fans hooked and
especially after this,
the big thing for the main reason I didn't watch it as much when it was on, I caught most of this show on our rewatch. I'd seen a few episodes here and there, but this is before the DVR. This is the dark times. I had a VCR. I had limited amount of tape space. I knew I was taping Babylon 5.
At 4 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday or something.
Right. Yes. So if I wasn't home, it had to be something special for me to program that in.
Yeah.
The dark times.
Programming
the
VCR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and I still, to this day, am upset. There was a wonderful little sci-fi movie, I think it was on CBS, called Without Warning. Which was basically a repastiche of War of the Worlds because it was done as a news broadcast of the meteorites that crashed.
Mm-hmm.
I programmed my VCR to tape that while I went away for the weekend and forgot that it was the weekend of daylight savings.
Oh.
So I only got the first hour of it.
Oh no!
I was not happy. So, but yeah. Now I think if both shows came out now. I think Bruce Campbell would still do it.
Yeah.
But it would do. I think they would both be a lot more successful being on sci-fi.
Honestly, I think Cleopatra would ultimately have been the winner in that bout too.
Yeah.
Because Jack is more of an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go into it knowing what to expect, you know, you just run with it. But just kind of starting off fresh without having any knowledge of the show or what it's all about, you know, Cleopatra 2525 is really the stronger show.
Yeah, I think that to really enjoy Jack, you have to have already kind of like Bruce Campbell's style of humor, which is not everybody's cup of tea.
Sure.
But you also have to have at least, you know, a passing interest in revolutionary era history, right? Because if
to
you're
get
not,
the jokes,
if you're not, well, yeah, to get definitely to get the jokes, because some of those jokes are real smart. But no, really, but if you're
believe
not
it or not,
into, if you're not into the setting of a show, why you're not going to watch it, and. Some people will say, "Oh, it's a historical comedy. I'm not even going to bother with that." Whereas if you're creating a new world, world building from scratch, you're going to have more people give it a try.
See,
I think.
Jack would have to be a little bit more serious.
I could see Jack of all trades working on Stars.
Yeah, maybe
but
so.
But I think still it would have to be a little bit more serious.
That's what I saw in Jack of all trades.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm surprised
that Cleopatra would slide right on to sci-fi right now.
I feel like Jack of all trades might be okay, like on Adult Swim.
Yeah.
Something late at night that is pure ridiculousness. Yeah.
Like when they aired Lex.
People going into it having the expectations of, okay, I'm going to watch whatever this is.
Yeah. Well, I looked up Amelia, the main actress, and she never really, I think she's from New Zealand, and she never really has done anything else. She's done a couple of movies there or something, but nothing else. She was good.
Yeah, she was amazing.
I thought she'd come to Hollywood and be a big celebrity.
Both shows relied heavily on the local New Zealand acting scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I was surprised she hadn't done anything else.
Yeah, I was honestly surprised Carl Urban wasn't in it. In either one.
Yeah, that actually, now that you think of it, yeah, that is very surprising, because Carl Urban is like in everything that films in New Zealand. Pete's Dragon, the new version, filmed in New Zealand.
He was in Xena.
He was in Xena.
Oh, they had. Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I keep wanting to say that I keep trying to put it back in the late 90s, but yeah, it was 2001.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I keep having to remind myself of that, because I keep thinking it was earlier.
Yeah, I know, it was 2001, and man, they were magic.
All right, so any last questions from the audience?
I have one.
All right.
Watch it.
That was
okay. So when
it
came out
to the map,
I was just 30. Really?
I was back then. I was about 16.
Yeah, 17, 18.
Yeah,
16.
When was that again? 2001.
I was 31.
Yeah, 16. Yeah. I was 16 going on 17-ish.
Like
I wasn't born yet.
20.
I was
20.
32.
Fortunately,
32.
Fortunately, I have one job on this track, and it's to make sure everyone else feels really old. That is my one job.
Well,
and I do it.
I already did.
I don't. So, I'm not much behind you.
You just made it worse.
Coming up, final thoughts or anything you wanted to say you haven't said yet about both or either show?
I think we've been pretty comprehensive. I just think it's great. If you like history, it's a nice lark that goes off, you know, Jack does. And I think you're right when you mentioned Farscape as far as Cleopatra, because they both are kind of like absurdist in a way and yet kind of serious drama and comedy another way. And there's always room for stuff like that. So I think they both served their purpose well and did it. And I think that they are both unfairly maligned by people who haven't really given them a fair shot.
Yeah.
Women being awesome. So go rewatch it. I mean, it seems so weird now that, I mean, there were a whole slew of shows where, yeah, there were a lot of female characters that were really strong, and now we're sort of just coming back to that.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, it fitting on sci-fi. I mean, Killjoys is one of my favorites. And we're sort of back in that same headspace with that show, so.
One of the things I loved about watching Cleopatra 2525 again was I loved the costuming. I loved the late 90s, early 2000s fashion sensibility in the future.
All the latex.
And one of the things I also loved was
shirts.
As much as, yes, it was a TNA show, to a certain extent, it wasn't. They didn't go out of their way to sexualize the characters.
They were just barely dressed.
Yeah, but it, you know, it was.
But they also called attention to it.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the very first episode, Cleo was like, "Oh, and your outfits really protect
right,
you."
Yeah.
Right,
you know,
from the start.
That's why we
but
have shoes.
But the same time, yeah, and they also, had, three of
but
them.
But the men were just as nearly
yeah,
barely
yeah.
dressed.
Yeah, I mean, which it was very equal, equal opportunity in that regard. But also, they had, the three women were a variety of body types because you had Gina Torres, the tall Amazonian, man Wonder Woman, she would have been amazing. And you had Sarge, who was a fitness model, and she's got abs for days. Like, you don't, when you see women, you know, in action roles, you don't actually see them very muscular, which is always, like, you get to see, like, guys with the chiseled muscles and stuff. You don't get to see women with that, because it's not apparently attractive. But, I mean, Sarge.
Depends on who you ask.
Sarge! And then you had Cleo in her Cleo-ness.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Nailed it with the absurdist nature of it. But there really is a lot to unpack there. Whether you want to unpack the comedy and jack of all trades or the world building and the sci-fi ideas of Cleo, I think there's a lot there, and they're worth revisiting every now and then.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, so, Van, if people want to see and hear more from you, once more, you are?
The White Rocket Podcast is probably the best place to go. WhiteRocketBooks.com or just podcast, White Rocket Podcast, and Plexico.net.
I'm at GoodToBeAGeek.com.
You'll find the links to all my social media on JustTegan.com, cards back in the alcove. And you'll hear me on the Revolution SF podcast, Rev News, and Revcast. And next.
Yeah, you can find me on the Anomaly podcast and the Women at Warp podcast, and cards up here on the table.
Put them in the alcove, like cool people.
I'll put them in the alcove when we're done.
And
you can find
on the Facebook
as well on the Revcast and Rev News with Tegan, who is the reigning queen and champion. And you can find me on Twitter as @Gary_Mitchell, Mitchell with one L. And join the Facebook group. And remember, please rate us in the app if you want more shows about shows like, or more panels about shows like this.
We have the best.
If you want more shows about panels.
Hey.
Absolutely. Guys, go super metal. Go on Amazon, buy copies of Jack of All Trades and Cleopatra 2525.
You can buy them both for like under $30.
Yeah, well, not both.
$30
together. Well, actually,
yeah, that's $30 for both.
And it's on YouTube. But buy them, support them. Maybe someday we'll get nothing.
Gina can't make it to a con. Can come back on Stars as a series, and Robert Tapper's a producer there.
Cleopatra 2525. We need the end.
Start that tweet. Hashtag. We need ending.
To match a DVD, we'll do.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.